Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Level Up Human, the comedy science podcast, souping up the Homo sapien. Hello and welcome to Level Up Human, the show that looks at the human race and tries to figure out how to make it better. We're taking suggestions from our panel, from our audience here at St. Andrew's Explorathon, and from the natural world to try and figure out exactly what the next stage in our human evolution should be. We're putting together a design spec, a to-do list for our kind. I'm your host, Simon Watt, and today I'm joined by three pimped primates in the form of our guests. Tonight's judge deciding what is worth incorporating into the species, human 2.0. On my immediate left is Jay Lafferty. Jay, what kind of ideas would you like to see now?
What kind of ideas? Oh, I don't know.
What would benefit you personally, I suppose?
What would benefit me personally would be, something so that you could be in two places at one time. Because quite often I am asked to do lots of things that sound great and exciting, but I have to choose between one of them. And so it would be good if I could be in two places at one time. That would be exciting.
Do you think that then when you did that, each of your two people would be wishing that they could be in two places at one time?
And there would just be an infinite amount of J's. That's terrifying.
But no, well, the fact that you find it terrifying when you are you, that
yeah,
actually
yeah,
says something, doesn't it?
I know me.
Well, that might,
you should be
dear.
Terrified.
I'd be quite happy having my own army of me. That'd be quite cool, actually. Well, pitching ideas to see what will go forward on my immediate right, we've got Sue Healy. So you are a Kiwi in the UK, and you're interested in birds, which is kind of right for a Kiwi, you know?
Yeah.
You're looking at cognition in animals, and you're currently working on the abilities of hummingbirds. Are hummingbirds that smart?
Hummingbirds are pretty smart. They have a brain about the size of a grain of rice, and they can learn when flowers have got, when they're going to have their the nectar come back into them. They remember where they are. And,
wow.
And the ones I work on migrate from northern Mexico to Canada, and they can do that and get back to the same place every year. I think that's not bad.
Jeez,
for a very small brain.
Well, if you're not pitching a hummingbird's ability for timing, like, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Like, a comic would love it for a start, wouldn't they?
Absolutely.
You know, hummingbird timing.
Hummingbird timing.
And just being that damn cute. Perfect. And we're also joined by Aaron Robbins. And Aaron, it says here you're doing cross-cultural research. What does that actually mean for cross-cultural research?
Well, that means I'm very lucky to travel all around the world looking at how children and adults develop social cognition. And it's a really excellent excuse to go to work on the beach. Hard, hard work. I suffer greatly, guys.
How did you swing that?
Like most things, it was very opportunistic. I just actually made friends with people who had interesting questions, and we ended up collaborating. And so now I've been able to go to Vanuatu, Samoa, Costa Rica, Honduras, China, Japan, you name it, I might have been there. And if any of you would like to do some cross-cultural research, come see me after the show.
perfect. And you're doing this in terms of it's for child psychology and development and things. So you can see this is the expertise that we have here. They will have ideas, but we're also taking ideas from our wonderful audience here at the Bar Theatre in St. Andrews. Yeah. Well, before we delve into the future, our panel have brought along some news stories to get us warmed up and to show you what's happening right now. So why don't we start with you, Jay? What is your news story? What have you brought with you?
So my news story was I have been reading about internal Fitbits. So give me a cheer if you have a Fitbit or an Apple Watch, anything that, yeah, few yes. people have them, yeah. So there's new technology coming out that would mean that you can get a Fitbit that is this dust size, and they implant it into your brain, and it internally monitors all of everything, not just fitness, but everything, medical, all these sorts of things. And then, and it feeds it back to a computer, and you can keep a very, very close eye on everything that is going on with you and your body.
Can I just ask, I thought that's what your brain did.
Fair point.
Yeah, well, why do we need Fitbits then? I don't know.
Why do we need Fitbits? Like, actually, as you two both do things in psychology, right? So why do we actually need to monitor ourselves? Whose desperate approval are we seeking?
So I have one. And the reason I have one is because I'm an academic and I do a lot of this, which is for those people who aren't sitting.
Yes.
That's right. No, sitting down. So it kind of is a way of making me get up out of my chair and walk round it a few times before I sit back down again. I don't exercise very much, is what I'm saying. Not exercising enough.
I don't need to be monitored to hate myself. Like, I can hate myself. Right?
But it monitors you in real time. So also I was thinking...
I hate myself in real time.
But I was thinking, because I bought my husband a Fitbit, or it was a kind of cheap version of a Fitbit, and he figured out that if he just sat and did this... the size that it would be as if he'd walked somewhere. And but if he had an internal one that I could download the data from, I would know if he lied about going for a walk or lied about not eating all of the bacon.
And I'm always lying to myself, which is why I need one of these. I'm incredibly self-deluded about how much activity I have. So I'll walk from my desk to the filing cabinet. I'm like, oh, yeah, burned 800 calories doing that, and it's just not accurate. So I think it helps me with that.
Well, you raised the thing which I find terrifying, and that is that somebody else monitoring you. Now, much as I can see why you might want to monitor your husband, does he want you to monitor
him? No, of course he doesn't want me to monitor him.
Do you want to have a thing which other people could... Like, imagine if your brain had Fitbit was hacked.
Yeah.
Like, is this the ultimate surveillance tool? And we're just
it
like
could be
it
though. It, I mean, it probably is. I personally wouldn't wear one or get one implanted, but I thought it was quite interesting that, and it showed you a little picture of it under lots and lots of magnifying glasses. And it is. It's tiny, tiny, dust sized.
Before we move on, by whipping the audience, whip if you would like to have this technology. Okay. And whip if you're appropriately paranoid.
Yay. So I don't think it's going to do well in the market.
Not in St. Andrews anyway. Cool. What's your story, Erin?
So this is inspired by the fact that for years now, my best friend has just been giving me terrible fashion advice. And I was very excited to learn. She's colorblind. I should set the stage for this. I was very excited to learn about a pair of spectacles that helps people who are colorblind finally see color. It's a great piece of technology. Essentially what it's doing, when you see the world, you have cones that are allowing you to pick up red, green, and blue. And there's some overlap for people who are colorblind. And so these glasses basically force the categories, and they won't let you absorb the overlap, so you see distinct colors. And it was developed after a surgeon who was colorblind went out onto a soccer field and commented that he could finally see the orange of the cones on the field, which I think raises a really interesting question of why a surgeon was doing his operations on a soccer field. That's probably the more dangerous point. So,
I'm just thinking, actually, you're lucky that, you know, all of our bloody red pink bits are more or less different hues of pink. Because if you're going to be red green colorblind, and you'd any bits that are mismatching.
Yeah, exactly. So,
You can be colorblind if you're a pilot, and you can if you're a surgeon. Is that right?
That is the impression I was left with, but I actually find that quite hard to believe. I don't know. Actually, I don't think it matters, though. If you're red-green colorblind, everything's mushy. You're just seeing gradients of texture. It's probably more informative in some way than the actual color of the organ. The color of the organ might tell you if your patient is more or less oxygenated, and you should know if you're operating on them if they're alive or dead. So I think that problem solves itself.
That's lesson number one, is it? Cool. What about you, Sue? What's grabbed your eyes?
I saw this thing that actually I think tells us a little bit more about ourselves, and in fact, today I went to a funeral, and so this piece of research really resonated even more. And it's that apparently when we go to sad movies or we watch sad programs on TV, afterwards we feel much more socially interested, and we're bonded with other people, and that's kind of what it felt like at this funeral as well. We all, not all hugging together, but you know, sort of, it was a really nice feeling. But there's apparently another effect that comes from watching sad movies, which is that your pain threshold goes up much higher, so you can withstand significantly more pain as a result.
Wow.
Which was pretty amazing, actually. So I don't know whether that was a good or a bad thing. But
does this mean that we could get like people watching up on the NHS?
Well, I know. I mean, wonderful, potentially. I mean, there was a downside. Apparently, a third of the people actually felt more pain afterwards. So you'd want to figure out which group of people you've got, whether you're the up or down regulated pain, but.
Physical pain, not mental pain.
No, yes, they tested physical pain.
Physical pain, yeah.
But again, yeah, maybe before childbirth, for example, you get women watching
beaches,
sad movies, and it would be a less painful experience.
But not Sophie's Choice, because that would be not before childbirth.
No, presumably you'd want to slightly choose which sad movie. Yeah, that's right.
Or The Omen. Yeah.
Although that's not so much sad as terrifying.
Right. Yeah, but so is childbirth again. No, well, honestly, I got a friend who just had, they went for like, you know, those sort of birthing pills?
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was like a scene from Jaws. So I think it's traumatizing enough in its own right. A literal bloodbath, actually, if not the worst. So that's the stuff which is actually happening right now. Let's leap into the future. Each of our panel brought along some ideas, and then you're going to get the picture of ones. Can we start again with you, Sue? What would you like to see in the next stage of human evolution?
I've just been to a meeting where the discussion was about human uniqueness. And there's a lot of talk about what makes humans special and so on. And the contrast is with humans and other animals. And for those of us who work on this kind of thing, we can ask people questions about who they are and what they are and what they remember and all that sort of stuff. But we have to design increasingly baroque experiments to try and ask those questions of animals. So what I'd really like to do is to be Dr. Doolittle. I'd like us to be able to talk to animals. And in my own job, that would be really good fun, to actually ask the animals, my hummingbirds, what did they learn, what did they remember, for example. But more broadly, I think, you know, for welfare reasons, we could ask animals whether they like something or didn't like something. I think I'd just
see,
talking
I
to
have,
animals.
I have two cats, and I would really not like anybody to hear some of the things that they have seen. I haven't always been at my best in front of my cats.
Tell us more.
Well, there are children in the audience. Just, you know, when you do ridiculous things and you think, oh, it's okay, the only person that saw me do that was the cat.
Well, you know,
or when
start,
I do my like naked dancing, dusting.
The fact that you lose the language of the only person that saw me was the cat, that you're calling them people.
Well, yeah, well, they do think of that. They are members of the family.
Do they have names?
But they're just very nice. Yes, they do.
What are they called?
They're called Abercrombie and Fitch.
Because, like, surely that's the first thing we disturb by this, is that because you discover that they're not called what you thought they were. Like, I've always thought most dogs would be called Woof. Like, it's bound to happen, isn't it? Okay, I can understand the welfare part of this, like in terms of, that sounds great, so we could treat animals better. Is it Nietzsche, or was it a philosopher who said that if we could talk to a lion, we still wouldn't understand it? Like the experiences of creatures, like humans are even so far removed that we have had to develop language, and even that is never enough. Can we ever actually understand an animal?
Well, that's a good point. I don't think we understand ourselves or other people particularly well, it's true. I guess, just for me, I really would like to know what it was like to be an animal. It's probably pretty hard, actually. It's mostly being hungry and trying not to be eaten and all those sorts of things. So it's probably a pretty sad story. And maybe that would mean my tolerance to pain would go up, and I'd get some benefit out of it. But you know, worms. Have you never thought, like, what it's just before you in the garden cut the worm in half? What it was like to have been a worm?
Do you want to find out? Whatever that's the case.
Well, I might garden more carefully.
There's a short story, isn't there? Oh man, where's Google when I need it? Like, where a person can hear all the animals, and I think he even hears all the plants, and he's walking in the grass and he goes mad because he always hears the grass screaming. Anybody know who that's by? It's Roald Dahl. It is Roald Dahl. Can we get a microphone to that lady, please?
Yes. Oh gosh. So yeah, somebody develops a recording machine where they can record the screaming of trees when you rip off a leaf or something.
The screaming of trees. That's a Captain Beefheart album right there, isn't it? The screaming of trees.
Yeah, it's also a real dust story. So, yeah.
So it was trees in that case.
And then they can hear the pain of trees and they go mad.
Well, you see, this is the point, is that this is more or less what you're saying, Sue, is that probably if we look at what nature is, it's mostly eat, sleep, kill, mate, repeat, those kind of things. So if I think of what I hear most of the time, The dominant sound of nature that I'm sure people, particularly around here, experience is seagulls, right? Mm. If you actually understood what they said and it was like Finding Nemo when they were just screaming, mine, 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 would it get annoying? Or even more so, if it's just, you know, more or less lots of different birds singing I'm horny over and over and over again, which is what the purpose of birdsong is, would you actually want to hear your hummingbirds?
Well, I think so. Yes, I do. I am interested in what they have to say, and you know, what do they?
It's I think it goes back to our arrogance that, you know, they would have anything to say to us. Do you know, like, they would maybe just be like, well, I know my cat wouldn't speak to me. Like, I know Fitch would just, you know, I would ask her something and it would be like having a 14-year-old child, or she would just go, and wander out. But I think it would be quite interesting if we could do it, because you were mentioning Disney films there, just to have the animals critique the Disney film version of them, just being like, I would never say that. That would never happen.
Do you think the potential there is, though, for this to backfire? So, like, it would increase our indifference to animals. So for us to still be able to eat them and wear them, we would just have to become even more callous and ignoring them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think we're pretty callous already. I mean, we wage war on other people. We can talk to them quite well, but we happen not to. We shoot at them instead. So.
But some people would argue that actually all wars are communication problems. So perhaps one of these days your cat is going to say something rude about that outfit that you're wearing, and then that's it gone.
Like, she does that with her eyes. I mean, she does. she doesn't need to speak. But I would find that really difficult because I love seafood. See, that's like, I'm a big foodie and I love seafood. And I already find it difficult when you get the lobster and you choose your lobster and then they carry it away. If the lobster was like, no, why me? I'd have to give up seafood, and I really like seafood.
As a kid, I always used to think that with all that happening in restaurants where people choose their lobster, that's a selective pressure, right? So just like in evolution, there's going to evolve to be one really disgusting, ugly species of lobster because it's never been picked. It's small, it's measly portions, it's hideous, it's warty, it's got wonky eyes, and that'll be the natural outcome of that. Is this on... Actually, before we move on, what would you like to ask an animal, if you had a chance?
Well, I think I will start with something like a worm and ask what it's like to be a worm. And perhaps the answer is going to be not much different from being a human.
Mm. Probably is. It's a worm like.
Well, yeah, but it might have, you know, loves and passions and memories.
I think I'd... Because I don't want to hear about that from most humans, actually. Never mind. So, on the shortlist? Dr. Doolittle, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I think I will put it on the shortlist because I would like to ask my cat, one of my cats, just constantly looks at one point in the room where there is nothing. And I swear she waits until it's really dark and you've just watched Carrie or something and then she just sits up and goes... I want to ask her, what are you looking at? Maybe I don't want to hear the answer. So yeah, I'm going to put that in.
Perfect. All right, Sue. Erin, you're up next. Can you beat this? What's your suggestion?
I can. Sticky fingers for babies. Now, I know you're already thinking they have sticky fingers, but this is different. So life is hard for an infant. They have enormous heads, super fat, super heavy, and it's hard for them to lift them. And for that reason, as researchers, we're kind of limited in how we can understand how infants understand, perceive, and act with the world. And parents are similar. You know, it's hard to get into the mind of your infant. So what I'm proposing is babies born with sticky fingers, kind of like geckos. And what this would enable an infant to do is to grasp objects from a much earlier age and interact with them. And then maybe it might even help scaffold their ability to locomote so they can press up on things and have greater stability. And that, in turn, would lead to a cascading effect of other developments, so better attention because you're getting more stimuli into your system. You'd have to become better at regulating it. You might even develop moral concepts earlier because when you're able to manipulate objects, you have ownership over them and you start having concepts that are a little bit more complex. So I'm thinking sticky fingers for babies.
How sticky are these fingers? Are they like Spider-Man babies?
Spider-Man babies. No, because they're not shooting webs. It's more like a gecko has the micro hairs on their fingers.
But are they able to crawl up and hang upside down on the roof, is what I mean.
Oh, yeah, but you are too, so you can go after them.
That's a very important caveat. Because the funny thing is, we have had sticky fingers before, but people are looking for it just to be able to climb. Nobody's gone at it from this angle of helping us to developmentally learn.
Oh, yeah.
So... What do you actually think that the ability to handle is the one thing which is keeping kids back?
I don't think it's the one thing, but I think it severely limits us. Infants are very haptic creatures. That's why you always see them sticking things in their mouth. They learn through touch. And so their inability to actually grasp things and interact with them is really hindering a lot of how they're learning. So I think you can provide them with a much richer sensory environment that could lead to really great conceptual change. I mean, think about how limited we are in our experience of just walking on this particular plane. If you could crawl on a wall and literally see the world from someone else's perspective or different angles, how could that scaffold your understanding of geometry and physics? I think it's unlimited.
Okay, I'm going to ask this a bit more because this is really cool as a concept that some people, because you're right, we're stuck on a 2D plane because we more or less walk around on the ground most of the time. A lot of my friends who do scuba diving, they argue that that's the best bit about it, is it helps them visualize the world in a 3D manner, because they're able to interact with it in a 3D manner. So why not just send kids scuba diving for their first kindergarten instead? Although they might run, actually. That's a
I think if I was going to go that route, I would just remove the scuba apparatus and I would add a blowhole to the mix, so I'd do a 2-for-1.
My kid's got a cold right now, and if he had a snotty blowhole as well, actually, that would not make me happy. What do you reckon, Sue? Would you be up for kids having sticky fingers?
Well, I'm not. What's the good thing about speeding up development?
I don't think it's
necessary. Apart from the parent might want, on occasion, to speed up particular bits of development, but...
Do we say they grew up so quick? If only they didn't have those sticky fingers.
Exactly. Well, part of it is speeding up development, but I think the more important point is giving a richer sensory environment and helping develop a broader conceptual repertoire. And so, you know, yeah.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There may not be a particular utility in having babies have, you know, a year advantage on these sorts of things. That's true. Although I would argue maybe the sooner you enter into these social relationships or understanding of physics and stuff, that in turn leads to more complex ways that you can interact with the environment. But I think it's just about enrichment. It's not necessarily about the trajectory in time. It's the enrichment argument that I think is more important here.
Currently my life is surrounded with lots of babies. And I don't know if I would want them. Like, think of how all the things they would get their sticky fingers on that currently they don't get their sticky fingers on. And particularly my friend is toilet training her 2 year or 1 year old at the moment. Yeah, I don't think I would want him to have sticky fingers as well as some of the issues that she is having.
They are pretty sticky at the best of times, actually.
Yeah.
But I see what you mean. This is a haptic thing.
Yeah, I get it. I think it's an interesting idea.
Definitely. Yeah, but think about how if they're able to interact with objects earlier like that, you're able to teach them sooner, you know, why that's dangerous. And that is some information they can generalize and apply to other things. So, yeah, object exploration is where it's at.
Okay, I get you here. So there's definitely, they will develop quicker. But let's imagine at the start, you send them off to nursery. And then at the end of the day, because they've been playing together, you just have this big ball of toddler where they've all, you know, played patty keck. They're holding on to each other. How do we get them apart as well? Like, do all children have to come with crowbars from now on?
Oh, goodness. That's an excellent question. I think we'll have to find some way to demagnetize them, because that's essentially what's going on with a gecko. So you can demagnetize using water vapor. That's the best way to get rid of van der Waal forces. So this is either you can spray them, you can travel around with a humidifier, and this is not an endorsement for vaping, but you could vape on your child.
This is sounding better now,
actually. Thank you.
All right, cool. Now, Aaron, is that in then?
Yeah. I'm going to put it in for just now, yeah.
Okay, we'll come back to these ones. Audience, it's going to be hard on you. These two ideas are going forward. You can do better. Come on. Hands up. Who's first?
Hi, my name's Lauren. And just a quick comment before my idea about babies with sticky fingers. I just have this idea of putting a baby in a playpen, and it'll be able to escape. So now we're going to have to put our babies in cages. And that, I sound like I don't have kids, so yeah. Anyways, so
parents in the audience, anybody have a problem with that?
Cages?
No? Okay.
So I think it would be really useful, and personally I just want to really be able to breathe fire, but not all the time, just controlled, just when I want to.
Well, you said really useful there. Come on, tell us more. Why is that useful?
Haven't you ever wanted to cook something or start a fire and you didn't have matches or a lighter? It seems pretty obvious. You can just breathe fire.
No. Why a lot of this?
So it's controlled. Like it's not every time you exhale.
I would like to breathe fire, but for a very different reason.
Why?
Well, sometimes as a comic, you have to deal with hecklers. I think there would be a lot less people heckling if I could, set the front row on fire.
Now, see, here's the real though. This is not. We have no superpowers in this podcast. This will be something for everybody, so they can retaliate just as much. Remember.
I would breathe fire into students, maybe, but heckler students.
Okay, other than the murder, can we like?
No, just to assert authority, not to like harm them.
Because I'm sure with tech that this is the kind of thing probably is possible. Like we can pretty much put flamethrowers on anything now.
Well, I'm thinking there's an additional benefit to this. So one way you could breathe fire is if you have some sort of combustible liquid, and as it passes through your mouth, it passes like a piezoelectric crystal or something that ignites it. Or you could have two chemicals that are combustible when they come into contact with each other. And I'm thinking it would be nice to be huffing those fumes all day. I mean, you would have some additional help there, so...
There is actually proof of process here in nature. There's a thing called the bombardier beetle, which more or less does that. It's not breathing fire as such, but it's a boiling hot liquid will shoot from its rear end.
I just want to be able to start a fire. it's that simple. So.
Okay, Lauren. Mind that lighters exist. Sorry, not Lauren. Jay, is this on the short list?
No, I'm not going to put that on the short list. Just,
sorry. Sorry, Lauren. Sorry, give her a big round of applause. Oh. And I think it's the lady in the front row next. Can you tell us your name, please?
Roslyn. My idea, there's been a few times this came up between my friends and I, and there's been a few things in the news as well, and I think it'd be really handy to have an on-off switch for fertility.
Instead of like switch for fertility.
Yeah, instead of like pills or accessories or whatever, you just have a little button.
This is a great idea.
With a little light, so you know which way it's just like a switch, and a little light, like it's like green or red.
Oh, okay, actually, can I ask, sorry, you said a great little light. You're basically talking about a traffic party there. Yeah.
If it goes on orange, you need to see a doctor, that kind of thing.
So, Ellen, is this light visible to others or just to yourself?
Because I think you'd have it in sort of probably like on your side or something. So you could still reach it and you could see your light and your partner could see your light. So, if you both had different coloured lights, you might have to have a discussion if it's a long-term relationship, but then you could just turn it off and on.
Okay, I'm so excited.
We're going to have to stop you there, Rosalind, because basically, as soon as you said that, Aaron started vibrating on the stage.
This exists. This exists for men.
Without a kick somewhere. Come on.
I'm not sure how... So essentially, someone has developed a device that can be implanted into the testicles, and you can switch your balls on and off. And... It's not that much more painful than inserting an IUD. So for women who have had one of those, it's not a walk in the park, but it's doable without general anesthesia. And apparently men found the experience to be far, far too invasive. So the ability to flick your reproductive organs on and off was just too inconvenient because they would hurt for about 10 seconds. But I just think that's tremendous.
It amazes me that men have turned down the opportunity to play with their balls.
Me too. I'm shocked by this. It goes against everything I know about nature.
So, okay, hold on. Tell me, you said this already exists.
Yes.
Is there a female equivalent as well? Because what we're talking about here, Rosalind's idea, is that everybody has got the ability to decide and go either direction.
So aside from birth control pills, I don't know of any devices like this. I've heard recently that someone has developed an artificial ovary. So potentially, if you were infertile, you could implant one, and then I don't know if you would have finer grain control over how that would work.
You see, I've got a good way of controlling my fertility, which is looking like this. So until I find a mercifully short-sighted, lovely lady to pity on me, I wasn't having any kids. It seemed to work. Like, I'm not arguing for the preaching abstinence idea, but with the technology we have, do we have this covered? Rosalind wants more. What do you think, Jay? Is this on the short list?
Yeah, let's put this on the shortlist.
Okay, flick a switch fertility. Give Rosalind a big round of applause. What's your name and what's your idea?
I'm Nora.
The inability to lie.
The inability to lie.
No, you have just literally done me out of a job. So, no. I don't need to hear any more about this in case somebody wants to do it.
Before we move on, because I'm sorry that's an unequivocal no from Jay, Nora, have you been lied to?
I mean, everybody's been lied to. And there have had, like, some traumatic lying in the past that has had this. But you have so many species that... Granted, they can still lie to each other in certain ways, but you don't have the same type of falsehoods necessarily that we do. And it would be interesting to exist in a world where you couldn't tell such blatant lies that people do nowadays. And I would wonder if it would then change our entire society and the way that we function with each other if you couldn't lie and you couldn't basically get people to do stuff the same way that we do now and just lie to people. I mean, how would that change society? Would it?
This is interesting. Okay, well, I'd like to ask a psychologist this because you're raising a very interesting question. Is I know that in, say, primate research, like looking at monkeys and apes and things, it's one of the best ways that we find intelligence is looking for the capacity to lie. Is lying good for us?
I don't want to know how fat my butt looks in these jeans, guys. Yeah, I think it's adaptive. Politeness lies are things that enable us to get along. And I think there's a certain utility in that. I mean, malicious lies obviously are harmful. But there are some kinds of deception that I think are good. And also humor is based on deception. You know, you think you're headed down one path, and then you jump tracks. That's a kind of deception. And I wouldn't want to live in a world where we can't laugh.
How would you feel, Sue, if you find out the animals you're talking to are lying to you?
Well, I kind of expect they will, yeah. Because cheating, lying, is found throughout the animal kingdom. From cheating with the colour pattern that you have on your back in a Bayesian mimic butterfly, for example, pretending to be nasty when it's not. Hmm. And, you know, people I know work on birds that vocalise where they pretend that there's a predator around and everybody else leaves and they get the food.
Wow.
It's yeah, it's all out there. You name the species, there will be some lying going on.
How excruciating would a first date be if you couldn't lie? I mean, I don't mean big, huge lies, but you're not one to tell your first date all of the true things about you. You want to keep a bit of the mystique and the desire there.
Yes, but you also don't have to tell them everything. You just say nothing.
Yeah, but if they ask, then you can't lie.
That's true.
That's the problem.
You can't lie, but you don't necessarily have to tell them anything.
And if they ask, yeah, so then...
So you sit in silence.
You just sit in silence. So then back to first dates being rubbish.
The thing is, I've been on that date. So hold on, that's just not on the short list. I'm really sorry, Nora. Give her a big round of applause. Thank you very much. Please, what's your name and what's your idea?
My name's Emily.
Hello, Emily.
And my idea is if you could, like, when you go to sleep, plug something in or something so you could, like, download your dreams and play them back.
So a dream catcher without the hippie connotations.
Yeah.
What do you reckon, guys?
That's an amazing idea. I like that idea because... So my husband hates me telling him my dreams. He says it's really boring. Just the ones I have at night, not like my hopes. He's quite supportive of them. but if I could just, you know, show him a little video of my dreams, that would be great.
I wonder about this, though, because you're saying about downloading them, playing them again. Can you actually sort of see dreams? Because one of the hardest things about dreams is they don't seem to have a firmness of concept. Like, I can walk into my house, which is also my school, and meet my wife, which is also my mother, which tells me more about myself than I want to know. You know, that's the kind of thing can happen in dream. There's a much more looseness of concept. Like, actually, again, with your psychology background, does anybody know why this is? Why are dreams less firm? Can we ever actually explain a dream to each other?
I honestly don't know. I think consciousness is hugely mysterious and above my pay grade at this point in time.
That's a good way of viewing it. I like this as an
idea.
Yeah,
I like it.
I'm going to give you a little bit of hope here, Emily, because the closest thing to this that already exists I wish I could remember their name. I think they're called narconauts or something. They're people who frequently have lucid dreams. And lucid dreams are dreams where you can control what happens. And they're therefore amazing because you do all the bad stuff and it's great. I used to have a lot of them when I was your age and I don't have as many now. But I've got a friend who's a professional lucid dreamer because they do research on them. Yeah, but they're now creating devices which will tell you when you're asleep so you will realize that you're dreaming. And then you can take action. So bearing in mind that you don't remember most of your dreams, but we remember most of our lucid dreams. Are you happy with that? I don't mean like just go and eat some cheese before you go to bed. I mean you've got to go and... It's like it flicks a couple of... It's like an eye mask which flicks a couple of lights into your eyes whenever you...
I think I've heard of something like that or something.
Are you sure you didn't dream it? How do you know you're here right now?
I don't know.
Neither do we. It's your dream. Give Emily a big round of applause. And for our final one, please, miss, what's your idea?
So my name's Georgina, and my idea is kind of on the sleep theme, that you'd have a kind of internal clock so that, you know, the night before you've got some big meeting or something, instead of just sitting there wishing that you'd get to sleep, you just click a switch and then you go to sleep. And then the morning, you know, you've got to wake up at 7 a.m. instead of like the groggy snooze and then snooze again. You're just like, you wake up, bam, 7 a.m., you're ready to go.
We're all about flicking switches in this audience, aren't we?
Yeah. They are, but that one I would like, actually, having just been at a meeting, got a bit stressed and didn't sleep the whole night.
People are working on this.
That's an academic one, that one.
People are working on this, aren't they? Because, like, I know that, say... I bought someone as in the States, because you can buy it there and you can't buy it here. Melatonin.
Oh, yeah.
So melatonin, I know personal experience when I tried taking it made me feel like my skin was crawling, so it didn't work for me, but that was a way of trying to induce sleep to get rid of jet lag and stuff. Anybody know anything about this? Audience included? You're smart people.
I actually do know a bit about that. They've got something in Germany called crystal milk, where they use cow... It's really weird.
Crystal milk.
It's cows that have been fed at midnight so that their melatonin is kind of in their system ready to put them to sleep. And then they milk them and then they give it to you. And it's supposed to make you go to sleep.
Does it work?
I have no idea.
And how is crystal milk not the milk of like unicorns instead of...
Yeah.
If you milk a My Little
crystal
Pony.
Milk. It's a very bad stripper name.
Crystal milk. Actually, just be a nice lolly is basically crystal milk, isn't it? Surely? You know, mini milks? How am I alone in knowing what I'm talking about here? Yeah, there's ice crystals, isn't it? Yeah, we're right. The rest of you are wrong. Thank you. So, well then, there's Georgina's idea of, how would we phrase this? A sleep switch.
Or like an alarm? Well, yeah, no sleep switch. Let's go with that.
How do you switch yourself on again, actually? That'd be the bother. Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking that it's not, as in it doesn't like send you into a deep, deep sleep, it just sends you to normal sleep. And then so if you hear something in the night, then you'll wake up and be like, oh, never mind, and then just turn it on again, go back to sleep.
Don't you think you'd have to, it would be better if you programmed it, so you could...
Yeah, it was like
when,
a timer.
When you're like, I'm going to sleep at midnight and I'm going to wake up at 7, so you could program it. So it wasn't a switch, really, it was more
an internal
program.
Alarm.
Yeah.
Is this going to just lead, because funny, I've got a friend who's a sleep researcher who's pitched things in the show about sleep elsewhere, and he thinks actually we've got a big, big problem because we don't respect sleep enough, because we want these instant fixes and we don't do things like avoid our iPhones. He'd claim that you can get everything you want by good sleep hygiene, is the word he uses. Would you be happy just to, you know, make a bit of an effort?
I guess I'm thinking about the situations where you really need to get to sleep and you just can't, and also just the horrible feeling in the morning when you just don't feel good enough to... Yeah, and you just wouldn't have that feeling. You'd just be, like, ready to go and just hop out of bed instead of just, like, waking up, rolling over and, like, checking your phone for 15 minutes.
But I think that's it, because the reason that you usually can't get to sleep is because of anxiety. It's an anxiousness about what's to come, and I think that if you flicked a switch, that anxiousness and anxiety would still be there and it would manifest itself in a different way.
And if you could record your dreams, they'd be awful.
Yeah.
So hold on, is this in the list or not?
No, I'm going no for that one.
Sorry, give her a round of applause anyway. Finally, we've got a suggestion from Mother Nature herself. This is what we call splice of life. What would you like to steal from this creature on the left? Does anyone know what that is?
A narwhal.
Narwhals. Now, I was working in Greenland a little while ago, and I got to taste some narwhal. It was disgusting, I had to tell you. It was the skin, because we were offered it by some local Greenlandic peoples there. Because the skin of narwhals has got as much vitamin C in it as oranges. Narwhals and pretty much everything other than humans, other primates, a couple of fruit bats, and I think a guinea pig can make their own vitamin C. Ah. So why not go and get that ability again? No more scurvy, no more anything like that.
Yeah. Is scurvy a big problem these days?
That's a fair point.
You're hanging out with a lot of pirates.
No, do you know what? Like, it was the whole thing. The potato was the thing which stopped scurvy through most of the Western world, I believe. There's just enough vitamin C in it that stopped us getting those diseases. But we could always still use a bit more vitamin C, surely.
Yeah. I like the spiky bits. I don't know what they are.
Isn't
tusks?
That a tooth?
Yeah, it's a tooth.
Oh, is it a tooth?
Yeah, but that's not a... Well, yeah, but like that's pretty... If instead of getting useful vitamin C, you want a seven-foot tusk coming out of your face.
But presumably the tusk has some vitamin C, so you just lick it and then it's a magic wand. It's just multi-purpose.
We need more magic wands in science. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Do you know what?
They look like sea unicorns.
They are. This is what people thought were unicorns.
Ah. I can't believe you ate a bit of it.
Yeah, it was polite to. We couldn't say no.
And
it was,
did they kill it, or did they scrape a bit off?
No, they'd kill them. They were allowed to. Like it's a, it was
not scientific narwhaling.
No, not even scientific. It was just it's, the people there were allowed to because it's their traditional thing. So it was we were in the place. We only had a tiny amount. It's because you probably noticed in Greenland there's not many like broccoli growing. No, this is the whole point. Is without narwhal, there would be no people living in Siberia, in Greenland, in. That was the reason why humans were able to expand to these places.
Because they could kill animals.
Because you could get vitamins from animals if you eat the right
parts. They should have taken cabbages with them.
Cabbages in the Arctic? What?
Well,
I know they're called iceberg lettuces, but it's not exactly how it works.
If you can grow potatoes on Mars, then surely you can take cabbages to Greenland.
You can't grow potatoes on Mars. That wasn't a documentary. Matt Damon has not solved all mankind's ills. Look, I think I'm losing here, and just partly because the narwhal has just got a beautiful face, and it's okay, it's a unicorn.
Yeah. It's a sea unicorn. I'll keep it in because it's a sea unicorn.
With magic vitamin
C.
You lot are hard to impress, okay. So the narwhal and its tusk. So, okay, Jay, you've got quite a lot to choose from here.
Yeah, gosh.
Do you want Sue's idea of Dr. Dolittling? You know, being able to speak to all the animals. Do you want Erin and her sticky fingers for kids? Not just because they've got jam on, but so they can feel things. Rosalind's fertility switch. Then with Emily's idea of being able to download dreams, perhaps. Or, you've more or less rejected the narwhal. That's it. So dreams, Dolittling, sticky fingers, or fertility switches.
Ah, they're all great ideas.
Don't patronise them.
No, they are good ideas. I like, there's some things that the talking to the animals that I am really up for, but then other parts of it that would just terrify me. The sticky finger children. Oh, I don't know. I can't get the idea of just Spider-Man children crawling all over the place and children that were smarter than me, which is most of them anyway, without their sticky fingers. But I really like Emily's idea. I really like the dream idea. So I think I'm going to go for Emily's downloading dream idea. But if I could bring two together, it would be quite good to download animal dreams. Download the animal dreams. Yeah, just see what the animals are dreaming about.
So we do know a little bit about that.
What are animals dreaming about?
Zebra finches sing, dream their songs.
Wow.
Dream their songs. See? Awesome.
How do we know that?
Because people have recorded them and they even do the bill movements that they would. So they're sleeping on their perches and they even do the little bill movements when they're...
They sleep sing.
Yeah.
That's adorable.
That's way better than snoring. Can
yeah.
We not just have
yeah.
A
sleep singing. So yeah, I think Emily... Emily's idea is definitely in there, but I would also like the opportunity to bring the two ideas together.
So, ladies and gents, you heard it here. We're going to go for downloading dreams and downloading animal dreams. We're going to take that idea and add it to our genes like evolutionary sprinkles to the Mr. Whippy of our species. Before we go, though, I'd like you to give a huge round of applause to... We've had Erin, we've had Sue, we've had Jay. We've had a wonderful audience here at Explorathon as part of European Researchers Night at the Byer Theatre in St. Andrews. And I've been Simon Watt, your host. This has been Level Up Human. Thank you and good night.
That was Level Up Human, hosted by Simon Watt, produced by Rachel Wheely, and supported by the Wellcome Trust. This episode was created with the help of St. Andrews University and Explorathon, the European Researchers' Night. For more information, go to leveluphuman.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.